Thank you, Elena. Mong Long, I heard that accompaniment. I could hear the river underneath the melody. Deep river, deep river. And speaking of rivers, Howard Thurman says, "The fascination of the flowing stream is a constant source of wonder and beauty to the sensitive mind. The restless movement, the hurrying, ever-changing stream has ever been the bearer of the longings and yearnings of humankind for land beyond the horizon, where dreams are fulfilled and deepest desires satisfied." Do Thurman's words speak to you? Have you ever found yourself fascinated by a river, sitting on its bank, wondering where it came from and where it was going? Curious about what was carried on its surface and what lurked in the deeper waters? Have you ever considered a river as the bearer of your longings and your yearnings? Has a river ever inspired dreams of fulfillment and satisfaction? Tell us, a free question. Tell us about some rivers you have known and loved and how they've spoken to you. Do you have a favorite river that you would share this morning, Suzanne?
The Moldau.
The Moldau, oh yeah.
The music just takes you away.
Absolutely. If you don't know the music by the Czech composer Smetana, the Moldau, it's a whole set of wonderful Czech music, but the Moldau is the river that flows through the heart of the country. Yeah. Mike?
Growing up as a boy in rural Oregon, we had as part of our property line officially it's called Bear Creek. The river went all the way
Bear down. Creek.
Bear, yeah, it was a creek.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. One year, my mom then froze over, so my mom was able to ice skate down it.
Really? Did it flow down into the Snake or the Columbia? Speaking of rivers?
The Wallawa River.
The Wallawa.
Deposits into Wallawa Lake.
Okay.
But not quite.
All right. Rivers you have known and loved? Anybody else? Got a favorite? The Big Piney River in southern Missouri. Yeah. Jim.
When I was a kid, I grew up along the Mississippi River.
Yeah.
Then we lived there for 10 years in Dubuque, Iowa. And we'd go out and look at the river, just thinking about where it comes from.
Yeah.
Minneapolis and all the way down to New Orleans and Gulf of Mexico.
Yeah. The mighty Mississippi. Are there rivers you've known and loved? The Rhine.
The Rhine
though. Yeah.
It starts out in Holland. It goes all the way to Switzerland, the Basel.
The other way around. Doesn't it start in Switzerland and go to?
Yeah, the other way around.
Yeah. Otherwise, you have it flowing up the mountains. But the Rhine. Yeah, the Rhine River.
Yeah, it's beautiful if you ever take
Yeah. Anybody ever done any river rafting?
Yeah.
On the Chuck, where'd your river raft?
Well, it wasn't river rafting, but I forget the name of the dam, but it's in Arizona. I don't know if it's Prescott, but it's as many of you know, I belong to the Outrigger Canoeing Club, and in 2018, we hope to do it again this year. That there's a race called ADR, which use my French.
Okay. On the Colorado River.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we're dependent on the Colorado River for our water, right? So that's an important river. Yeah. I I've rafted on the American River up north, and right on the gentler parts of it. Never tried the Snake River that flows, the Salmon River that flows through central Idaho, which is really a high velocity river rafting. But I have floated the Boise River more than once from up the creek and down the river into town. So rivers we've known and loved. I've known rivers, writes the great poet Langston Hughes. Rivers ancient as the world and older than the flow of human blood in human veins, the river sings and sings on. There is a true yearning to respond to the singing river, proclaims Maya Angelou. The slave sings, deep river, my home is over Jordan. Speaking of rivers seems to play an important role in African-American thought. Thurman writes that for the slave, the river likely served both as the last and most formidable barrier to freedom and the gateway to that promised land where all is peace. It represented both life and death, hope and fear, possibility and prison. We've already observed that for the slave, heaven represented a better life. Perhaps they would only know that better life after death, but just maybe they might yet find their way to freedom in this life. Still, they knew that somehow heaven in all its glory would eventually and inevitably provide a dwelling place for those who had been ripped from their homes in Africa and forced into slavery. We need to be clear that this image of heaven was not escapism for the slave. It was not a way of keeping them in chains, cooperating in their own enslavement, but they also knew that the opportunities for freedom were few and far between. They surely faced danger, punishment, even death if freedom's flight failed. In his little book, The Negro Speaks of Life and Death, The Negro Spiritual Speaks of Life and Death, Thurman argues that the facts make clear that religion did serve to deepen the capacity of endurance and the absorption of suffering. What greater tribute could be paid to religious faith in general and to their religious faith in particular than this? Thurman argues that the facts make clear that religion did serve to deepen the capacity of endurance and the absorption of suffering. What greater tribute could be paid to religious faith in general and to their religious faith in particular than this? It taught people how to ride high in life, to look squarely in the face of those facts that argue most dramatically against all hope, and use those facts as raw material out of which they fashioned a hope that the environment with all its cruelty could not crush. Deep river, my home is over Jordan. Deep river, Lord, I want to cross over into campground. Oh, don't you want to go to that gospel feast, that promised land where all is peace? Deep river, my home is over Jordan. Speaking of rivers, John of Patmos tells us of the river of the water of life, bright as crystal, flowing from the throne of God and of the Lamb through the middle of the street of the city. Remember the New Jerusalem that we explored a couple of weeks ago, that holy city with its streets of gold, whose foundations and gates were made of precious jewels, the city in which God dwells with mortals, wiping every tear from their eyes, the place in which death will be no more. Mourning and crying and pain will be no more. And right in the center of that glorious heavenly habitat runs the river of life, nourishing on either side the tree of life with its 12 kinds of fruit, producing its fruit each month, the leaves of which are for the healing of the nations. Oh, could we not use some of those leaves today for the healing of the nations? Life, like a river, is a process, always in flux, moving inexorably from its source to its goal. The river springs from sources hidden deep underground and flows with undaunted determination to the sea. There's a Sufi saying that the ocean refuses no river. The ocean refuses no river. You see, there is an undeniable link between the river and its goal. The vastness of the ocean accepts and embraces every river in a gesture of homecoming. So it is with life, which springs from sources deep, hidden deeply in the heart of God, and flows with undaunted determination back into God's oceanic depths, where God accepts and embraces all of creation in a grace-filled gesture of homecoming. As we noted earlier, listening to the proclamation of biblical truth and good news of Jesus Christ, slaves heard and understood that regardless of the situation in which they found themselves, no matter how harshly and cruelly they were treated, they were children of God. Their lives flowed from God back to God. Thurman writes, with untutored hands, with a sure artistry and genius created out of vast vitality, a concept of God was wrenched from the sacred book, the Bible, the chronicle of a people who had learned through great necessity the secret meaning of suffering. This total experience enabled them to reject annihilation and affirm a terrible right to live. The center of focus was beyond themselves in God, who was a companion to them in their miseries, even as he enabled them to transcend those same miseries. They came to believe that their journey on this earth might be a torturous one, but nothing, not even death, could separate them from the love of God. In truth, there was a sense in which death was that river they crossed to freedom, and that better life in the heavenly city, in which life itself flowed from the throne of a welcoming God. And still, we need to remember that heaven is not all about escaping this world. Remember, Christ taught us to pray, "Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven." And commenting on this 22nd and final chapter of Revelation, which Banglong read for us, Mitchell Reddish writes of end times, "To pray for the coming of Christ is to pray for God's triumph over sin, evil, and death. To pray for the parousia, that is, for God's presence, is to pray for a world of compassion, nonviolence, love, joy, and justice. To pray for the coming of God's kingdom is to pray that God's world, this world, will be healed and renewed. To sing Deep River is just such a prayer. The slave had heard the holy word and had a fundamental understanding of what was right and what was wrong in this old world. They believed the ancient word that a day would come when things would be set right, when God's will would be done on earth as in heaven, when justice would roll down like a river and righteousness like a mighty stream. Yes, I have known rivers. My soul has grown deep like the rivers. And from the depth of that flowing stream, I dream a world where no one another will scorn, where love will bless the earth and peace its paths adorn. I dream a world where all will know sweet freedom's way, where greed no longer saps the soul nor avarice blights our day. A world I dream where black or white, whatever race you be, will share the bounties of the earth and everyone is free. Where wretchedness will hang its head and joy like a pearl attends the needs of humankind, of such I dream.